This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wong Xiaoning and Roshan Kanisen. It is 7.07 in the morning, Friday the 20th of December. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to be discussing the elements of government budget allocations and also the latest on Goldman Sachs. But before that, let's take a look at the markets.
The big news yesterday was that U.S. President Donald Trump had been impeached. But of course, this was just in the House. This will have to go to the Senate, which is Republican-controlled. And no one's expecting anything to happen there. So this will be similar to the Clinton case in 94, where he was impeached in the House but acquitted in the Senate. U.S. markets were green. The Dow and S&P were up 0.5%, while the Nasdaq was up 0.7%. But before that, let's take a look at Asian markets. They closed yesterday mostly in the red, actually all in the red. Nikkei and Hang Seng were down 0.3%. The Shanghai Composite closed was flat. Singapore STI was down 0.1%. And the FPM KLCI was down 0.2%. On a separate note, Bursa Malaysia closed abruptly at about 4:45 p.m. yesterday, 15 minutes ahead of market close. And in a statement, it said that the exchange was investigating the matter and that trading is expected to resume as usual today.
Yeah, must have been quite a bit of a panic moment if you're a trader and you're desperately trying to key in the orders and nothing seems to be moving. You're either thinking, my system has failed, my clients are going to kill me because I didn't sell or buy the order. But it looks like it's a Bursa issue. And this is not the first time because the exchange system actually suffered a technical glitch this year. So on August 23rd, Bursa said that its FBM KLCI price feed experienced nearly an hour-long interruption. And so they only started to disseminate prices again at 4:25 that day. But this is not new because even Singapore has had trading glitches. It's just that it shouldn't happen, because you expect it to function at 110%, not 100%, 110% if that's possible.
Absolutely. And also the last 15 minutes I expect is it's the rush time, right? Because you're trying to get in all of your last minute calls and it's like to have the exchange close 15 minutes ahead of time, I can imagine I would be panicked in their shoes.
Yeah, and if you are a proprietary trader where you have to close your positions for the day and you can't do it at 4:45, it's panic. So apparently today they're going to allow some of these proprietary traders wonder what they're going to do with their short positions then.
Indeed. So that's going to be interesting to watch once the KLCI actually does open later at 9 o'clock. But in the meantime, for a broader view of how Asian markets have performed this year and what 2020 holds for us, we have on the line with us Carlos Casanova, Chief Asia Economist at COFAS in Hong Kong. Thank you for joining us, Carlos. So China's central bank has just injected the most cash into the open market since January on fears that there would be a liquidity squeeze come the festive season. But is this just a short-term pain that they're experiencing?
Hi, good morning, and thank you for having me on the show. I do believe that this is going to be a one-off short-term factor. So if you look at credit figures from last week, we did see an increase in November. Every time we see an increase in aggregate financing and even loans, you have foreign investors. They begin to discuss the impact that this is having on monetary policy and on broader liquidity. However, if you look a little bit deeper at outstanding credit figures, we did see that those remained very flat in November. So they are trying to keep things around 10%, which is the target for this year, which means that no increase in corporate debt or other sources of financial instability in the system. However, they do have to worry about these short-term bouts of lack of liquidity due to seasonal factors. And so most likely what we are seeing is a bit of a dry up in the interbank system. So by injecting through open market operations, they try to avoid there being any systemic issue in the short term for in particular smaller banks that are a bit more dependent on the interbank system for their financing needs.
Carlos, now that phase one has been agreed upon, do you expect the Chinese economy to start seeing a recovery or is it still too early to tell?
In our opinion, it's too early to tell. It was a win-win situation for both sides to actually leave that increase in tariffs potentially for next year or to exclude it altogether. For China, of course, it would have been a big blow to the economy to have 15% on a bunch of consumer goods and consumer electronics right before the festive season in the U.S. But for the USA, of course, these are consumer goods in the end, so it would have had negative implications over inflation. So in our opinion, it was an easy phase one deal, but remember, we still have tariffs on all of the other exports to the U.S. So we do expect that the trade war will continue to weigh approximately 0.7% of GDP in 2020. That still warrants some form of response from the Chinese authorities. However, it's a good first move that we don't have that added headwind with that added pressures going into 2020. But a lot could still go wrong. The deal hasn't been signed. And of course, China's commitment to increase 200 billion additional goods is a big one. So a lot could still go wrong as well on the execution part of the deal.
And Carlos, the Bank of Japan has left policy untouched in its latest policy announcement on the back of a somewhat brighter outlook for 2020. So do you think the boost from the government's stimulus package will be enough to weather lingering investor concerns over all this trade war in 2020?
The fiscal stimulus package was definitely bigger than expected. It was about 2% of GDP, and that might be significant enough to enable Japan to fend off that recessionary risk that we've discussed in the past. So Japan might not actually enter a technical recession, but it will continue to experience downside pressure stemming from that contraction in exports in the first half. And despite they have announced the stimulus package, you will have less investment on the Tokyo 2020 Olympics front. So throughout the first half of the year, that is definitely going to be a negative drag on the economy. Of course, starting from July, you will have a big international sporting event that's going to attract a large number of tourists. And so for the second half of the year, you'll have that tailwind on the back of better retail, better sales, and also a positive base effect as a lot of that negative impact of the tariffs wanes off in the second half of the year. So going into the second half, there will definitely be some upside, but the existing pressures will continue into the first half despite of this better than expected fiscal package.
Carlos, on to another open economy. South Korea is expecting to improve next year on a possible global technology upturn. How much of a rebound in exports are you expecting for 2020?
Again, much similar to Japan, Korea will have a positive base effect in the second half, and that's going to show on exports because figures in the second half this year were so bad that in the second half next year, they will pick up just on pure base effect. The technology argument is another interesting one, and South Korea is one of the first countries in the world to deploy 5G, but it's not at a stage yet where it will trigger a big replacement cycle, like we usually see when there's a new iPhone launch or there's a new product launch. There's a big replacement cycle, and that really drives demand for final electronics, and because the supply chain is so embedded within Asia-Pacific, that usually results in an upswing in exports from a lot of these countries. In my opinion, we will see a little bit of an uptick in the second half as a lot of countries start to put together their 5G networks, but it's not going to be as big as we expected before the trade war, where we anticipated that it was going to be one big international uptick in demand. This is going to be more of a fragmented uptick. Whenever a market has their 5G network up and running, you'll have more consumers in that place looking to upgrade into better phones, whereas in other parts where it takes longer, it might just take a little bit longer for that replacement cycle to be triggered. So for South Korea, definitely some upside, but it will be constrained by technological limitations as well as this ongoing trade war, which we don't think will be completely resolved in 2020.
Well, thank you very much for your insight there, Carlos. And that was Carlos Casanova, Chief Asia Economist at COFAS in Hong Kong, talking to us about South Korea, Japan, as well as China. But of course, the trade war was the overhanging factor in his expectations for all of those countries. And in addition to that, the U.S. has also pushed through some important decisions. So there were two important decisions made by the U.S. House of Representatives yesterday. One, which we mentioned earlier, was the impeachment of President Donald Trump. And we'll be discussing that in more depth later at 7:30 with Mark Rosell of George Washington University. But in contrast to the very divided debate on impeachment, the House of Representatives also overwhelmingly approved President Trump's amended North American Trade Pact.
So in stark contrast to the impeachment proceedings, the House approved legislations to implement the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or the USMCA, with a vote of 385 in favor and 41 against. This was very bipartisan, with 193 Democrats and 192 Republicans backing the pact. The Senate is expected to pass the legislation early next year, after which the president is expected to sign it into law. So in one day, you have two very divergent issues in the House. The USMCA seeks to update the original NAFTA agreement by accounting for electronic commerce and revising the rules for the auto trade. Mexico's Senate has approved the deal, but it will need ratification in Canada to enter into force and in order to replace the current North American Free Trade Agreement.
And meanwhile, moving on to Europe, Airbnb has won a big legal victory there after the European Court of Justice ruled that it does not need to comply with the onerous regulations applied to property agents in the EU. The court decided that Airbnb is not equivalent to a real estate agent. It sees Airbnb as a broad platform of potential accommodation rather than an ancillary tool to book a specific type of home rental. It found that its site did not attempt to influence what landlords charge for their homes and that there were many other existing ways for landlords to find tenants. It also said that EU states should not ban Airbnb unless they needed to do so to fight crime, restrict racism, or protect consumers and investors. Now, this ruling is actually a huge win for the gig economy companies as it marks a departure from the recent clampdown by regulators in Europe. Now, previously, the ECJ ruled in December 2017 that Uber should be classed as a taxi operator rather than an intermediary service for riders to find drivers.
All right, and right now though, we are heading into a few messages, and up next we'll be discussing the elements of government budget allocations as well as the latest news on Goldman Sachs. So keep it here with The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.